This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Threats to our safety online continue to grow, and not just for individuals. Cities, large and small, are shelling out serious cash after being hit by ransomware. And another thing to think about is, how are you saving your password information? Do you use enough varieties with your passwords? Are you at risk? Entrusted IT expert and Fort Wright, Kentucky Mayor Dave Hatter has information on what you need to know. I spoke with him earlier. Dave Hatter, thanks for coming back.
Always my pleasure, Michael. Thanks for having me.
We're going to run through some headlines that are affecting cybersecurity issues and more reasons why we all need to be terrified about the things we do to ourselves, really. It seems like more and more we just voluntarily give away so much information. It's terrifying. And you wear just the right size tinfoil hat to keep us all on track.
It's a big one. 10-gallon.
But in addition to being rightfully concerned about so many issues, you're also the mayor of a city. You're the mayor of Fort Wright. And I bring that up because more and more, little governments like that are facing a huge problem from something called ransomware. I read about all these cities in Texas, 22 of them, all at once hit by a ransomware hit. And we already know that Baltimore and
Atlanta
had been hit.
Huge examples of this, yeah.
Okay, first, just tell us what ransomware is.
So ransomware is a type of malware. Most people would call it a virus of sorts that's specifically designed to encrypt the data on your device and then hold you ransom unless you pay whatever they're asking, typically in some type of cryptocurrency like Bitcoin. They won't give you your data back. Now, you know, if that's a bunch of family photos and that sort of thing, that's really inconvenient and unfortunate. But if that's all your financial information for yourself personally or your business, or perhaps, as has happened in the past, police department evidence or something, now you have a major problem on your hands. And depending on the type of ransomware, and I want to throw out there, there's a website called No More Ransomware. You can, in many cases, for older variants of ransomware, find decryption keys that will allow you to unlock your data. So before you just automatically pay a ransom, you should do some research on this, perhaps find your dorky friend like me who could give you some advice. So there sometimes is a recourse. And another recourse, but this is proactive, you should be backing your data up regularly. If you have a good backup and that backup is not in a place that the ransomware can get to, you can at least restore to whatever the last good known point was. Unfortunately for many people, though, they're not practicing good hygiene like that, and consequently, they get hit with ransomware. Their data's locked, and the only way to get it back, unless you can find something that will decrypt it for you, is you got to pay the ransom, which can vary. And as cyber criminals using these ransomware attacks have found, many people will pay. Of course, that further incentivizes more ransomware attacks, and the price has been going up because sometimes, again, like if it's police evidence, if you have no recourse, you're probably going to try to pay.
These ransomware criminals, do they know what they've got their hands on when they get into some government information? Do they know, like, well, I've got the keys to this big case they're working on, or I've got all the access to this, you know, how they pay their water bills?
Now, that's a really good question. So kind of going back to your whole angle on these smaller cities, you know, I think one of the reasons why we're seeing more targeting, like 23 cities in Texas recently seem to have been targeted, is because in many cases, they don't have any sort of internal IT staff. They're probably not real savvy about IT and these kind of threats. So they're an easy target to some extent and probably don't want to spend a lot of money on it until after it's too late. You know, do they know what they have their hands on? I would say maybe. You know, and one of the things I think people way underestimate about their own risk in any of these types of attacks is that a lot of this stuff is automated. They're not necessarily targeting Michael Monks or Dave Hatter or Joe Dokes or whatever. You know, bad guys are either writing this software or they're buying it online somewhere, and they're just launching hundreds of millions of phishing or cyber-related emails where you'll get this kind of ransomware when you click a link or something, right? So that's one way. Now, there are plenty of examples of targeted attacks where, you know, they may want to go after some police department somewhere because if the police department doesn't have a good backup, they know they're probably going to be forced to pay. So, you know, once they have access to that computer and start the encryption process, yeah, they could steal all that data too. That's another problem. They can exfiltrate all that data and do who God knows what with it. So I would say in some instances they do. Some of this is targeted, but a lot of it is really just automated. They're just blasting stuff out. Because think about it. If I send out 100 million emails, and let's just say I get 0.1% of the people to pay a $500 or $5,000 ransom, I just made a lot of money.
No kidding. I see one headline that says ransomware attacks cost nearly triple in 2019, more than $36,000 per attack. And that's usually individuals that are being targeted.
That's probably more a business statistic, because I think your average person is obviously not going to be able to come up with $36,000. But ask yourself this: if you are a business owner or a small city or something, do you have a spare $36,000 bucks laying around to pay the ransom and hope that the criminals decrypt your data?
Or
my answer is no.
Or worse. I mean, Baltimore feels like, I guess they did an estimate on how much this cost them, $18 million. And that's not the total cost they paid these people, but just the impact to city service. Little Lake City, Florida, a town of 12,000, they got hit by ransomware. This is according to the Washington Post. Their insurance stepped up after the ransomware people asked for about $1 million, I guess. The insurance negotiated it to $470,000. So
you touch on another really important aspect of this. Even if you have some type of cyber insurance that will pay, you may have to fight them to pay that claim. How much downtime can you afford? What is the cost of bringing in experts to try to undo this, put things back the way they were? So, yeah, there's all kinds of potential tertiary costs that go along with this, even if you do or don't pay the ransom. So it's really important that people of all, you know, whether you're a city government, a state government, a small business owner, a big corporation like a Kroger or P&G, or just some guy like me or you, you really have to take this stuff seriously before you become a victim and suddenly find yourself either potentially paying a large ransom or losing a lot of critical data or possibly both.
Yeah. I mean, how do you, if you're running a city as you are, if Fort Wright got a message from some people that says, all right, we've locked you down, we have all of your information, and you're not getting it back unless you pay us $500,000. What are those costs that you have to evaluate? How are you able to estimate whether it's better to just start fresh or cash that check?
That's a really good question. So for us, we work with a third-party IT service provider that we've worked with for a long time. You know, our data is getting backed up regularly. So the first step for us would be to call them and to try to stop any further infestation of this, right? Because okay, if it gets one computer on your network, it typically is going to try to spread to 2, 3 and go as far as it can, because the more data it encrypts, the more likely you are to pay the ransom and the more they can demand, right? So, you know, the first step would be to try to stop it in its tracks wherever it is, figure out what the damage is at that point, and do we have good backups? So, you know, we test this sort of stuff and in theory would be able to just roll back to the most recent backup. But even in a case like that, you might lose hours of work, days of work, weeks of work, depending on how good that backup is, how frequently you're backing up, because that has a cost. We'd have to pay to have someone evaluate where are we and what are we going to do to roll back. So, you know, we've tried to take precautions against this sort of thing and spend money regularly to try to ensure that we're being as, because there's a dividing line somewhere between spending a ridiculous amount of money and, you know, what's due diligence and due care to ensure that whatever you are doing will most likely protect you. Because there's no foolproof guarantee to this stuff. So that's how we'd look at it. And ideally, not pay the ransom. But I can't say that, again, if something happened with the police department and, you know, that we might not have to pay the ransom. We'd think real long and hard about it, though. Because, again, there's no guarantee if you pay, you'll get your data. And B, you're just basically further incentivizing bad guys to try this sort of thing.
Are there any guidelines for cities? Are there any like conferences? Like, if you remember the Kentucky League of Cities, for example, mm-hmm. is this being emphasized at all?
People are starting to pay more attention to it. So the Kentucky League of Cities recently has tried to cover this somewhat. There are actually a variety of federal government organizations like the National Institute of Science and Technology who've put out all kinds of free information. It's useful for businesses. It's useful for small governments. It's frankly, it's just useful for regular folks. I encourage folks to check that out. There's the MSIEC. There's a variety, USCERT, the U.S. Computer Emergency Response Team. So there are a variety of federal-level organizations who are studying this, working with this, trying to defend federal-level stuff, who are putting out a lot of useful guidance, guidelines, benchmarks, standards, policies, procedures, that sort of thing that any small city out there could use to form the basis of what they're doing, inform their IT people or whoever they're working with. So it's certainly getting a lot more awareness and people are paying attention and there's folks out there trying to help, but I'm not sure that message has filtered down to the lowest levels at this point yet. So I appreciate the chance to come talk about it at places like this. So hopefully individual cities, people everywhere will say, hey, this really is a risk to me. I need to be doing something about this.
I never am more afraid than after the segments in which we have you on, but it's true. I
mean, Doomsday Dave.
It is Doomsday Dave. And by the way, that is Dave Hatter, IT expert here on Cincinnati Edition with us today. Google warned us. Billions of passwords, hundreds of thousands of username and password combinations hacked. And I have to ask, how susceptible is the average person to having their password hacked because they don't change it up enough?
Unfortunately, Michael, I think the average person is extremely susceptible to this. So there are all kinds of data dumps all over the dark web. So bad guys leak data, breach data from here. Someone leaks data from there. They aggregate this data. They sell this data. It might have your username. It might have your password. And, you know, consequently, because people choose really bad passwords, there's a company every year that does a study. And for the last 4 or 5 years, the same 10 passwords typically show up on the worst passwords list of whatever year, you know, and it's things like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, password, A, B, C, D, E, F, that sort of thing. The bad guys know this, okay? They know that people do these kind of things, and they know that if they can find your username, that chances are you may have used one of these bad passwords somewhere, hopefully not your bank or your insurance company or health insurance company or whatever. The other thing that I don't think non-dorks like me don't really get is there's all, again, all kinds of automated tools, right? You can get a password cracking tool off the dark web for free that will scan every word in the English dictionary. So I can try a brute force attack once I find an account for you. You know, let's say your Gmail account is your username somewhere that's leaked. Well, I just plug you into a database and it just cycles through these things, right? So I go to Fifth Third Bank or I go to Capital One or whatever, and I plug in that email address and just start running down passwords, okay? These things are automated. That's what people don't get. They're not necessarily targeting you or me. I mean, perhaps, but in general, a lot of this is just automated. So if you're using these bad passwords, if you're using the same password on multiple accounts, once they find one that works, now they know they got one that will potentially work somewhere else. In many cases, they're also doing something called open source intelligence. They're using social media to see like, oh, you just mentioned that you paid for your Netflix account. Well, let me see if I can hack into your Netflix account.
Oh, man.
You know, and I'm guilty of, you know, talking about these kind of things myself. So I'm not saying people shouldn't use social media or shouldn't talk about things in their life. But the more information you put out there, the easier it is for the bad guys to ultimately try to use that information to impersonate you. And then with these huge data password breaches, like Google mentioned, it makes it very easy to attack the regular person. So to Google's credit, you know, they've recently built a tool. It's called Password Checkup. You can install it in your Chrome browser if you use Chrome. And when you attempt to log into a website, it will tell you if that password shows up in any of these giant database breaches. Now, it's all encrypted and they're not storing it, they claim, and I'm going to take them at face value at this point.
That's not like you.
Well, I like to hope in this case, because it seems like they're trying to do a good thing here. They really are doing what, and I think this would backfire on them terribly if it were ultimately determined that they're not doing what they said they're doing here. So if you do use Chrome, I'd recommend people get this because it'll give you a very quick insight every time you try to log into a site if that username password pair has been compromised somewhere.
It's called Password Checkup. I assume you can Google that.
You can, and it's just an extension that installs in your browser. There's also a website called Have I Been Pwned? It only checks your username, but that's another – it just goes against a huge database and attempts to say, has your account been compromised somewhere out there?
I've been fortunate, but just a couple weeks ago, I got an email notification that an odd location had logged into my Hulu account, and it was in Germany, and so I had to reset the password, and this got me thinking about something because I didn't know the password anyway. I'd forgotten it. It's like on the smart TV, so I just make it, it just turns on, and so I thought, well, wait, I know where I have that saved. I have it saved in Google. Google will save my passwords. How safe are those Google Password Protector?
As a general rule, I would suggest, and I know people don't like to hear this as advice because it sucks to try to remember these passwords, but I do have a solution. In general, I would not recommend that you save passwords in your browser like that. For example, if whatever device you're using with those saved passwords, you got lost, got stolen or whatever, they're into everything that you have. Okay. And so if, let's say you just have a Windows computer and you have a bad password on it, I steal your computer, I log into that, and now I can get into your bank. I can do anything I want because of those stored passwords. A better approach would be to use some kind of password manager tool. At Intrust, we like to recommend LastPass. There's a bunch of these out there. I encourage people to do their own homework. I mean, you can just go out and go to somewhere like ZNet or CDNet and Google these things and see what their editors have to say. But with LastPass, it basically gives you an encrypted mechanism to store your password, username and passwords. You'll have one master password. As long as you protect that, everything is encrypted. It will let you create very strong passwords. Like you can create an 84-character password if you want. You'll never have to remember it. Once you associate it with, let's say, Hulu or Netflix or whatever, when you go to Hulu, once you've logged in with your master password, it will automatically take care of that for you. That's not to say there's no risk there. I mean, if you're connected to the internet in any way, there's some risk. But, you know, these guys have been around a long time. The issues they've had in the past, they've dealt with very quickly. They use extremely strong encryption. And there's a lot of businesses that use this tool as well. So again, I'm not making any money off LastPass. I just find that it works really well. We've had really good luck with it. I would recommend folks look at a password manager because it gives you a way to make it easy for you, whether you're on a mobile device, a PC, or whatever, to manage strong, unique passwords and do all the things you're supposed to do, but are very painful to do if you don't have a tool like that.
Oh man, that's so much work, but I'm going to get on that because that was a wake up call. I mean, it was just like, this is just Hulu, but goodness, if it's the bank account next time, I want to be extra careful. And you mentioned, have I been pwned? That's PWNED. You can look that up online too, to find that they've got their list of the largest online breaches for people's user information. And most of these I've never recognized, but MySpace is on here for those of you who are still using that. 359 million breached accounts. But how about this? LinkedIn, over 164 million breached accounts.
Yeah, Yahoo, over a billion. I mean, and again, once that data is out there, you got to assume it's out there forever. And these lists just get bigger and bigger and bigger. So even if you're not in there today, you might be tomorrow. And that's why it's so important to make sure you're taking this stuff seriously and using a strong, unique password. And another thing, before we run out of time, multi-factor authentication, sometimes called two-factor authentication. Anywhere and everywhere you can turn that on, you should. And all that really boils down to is when I go to log in, let's say Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever, I have the option to say, yeah, the username and password are nice, but I'm going to have to supply some kind of PIN. It'll be texted to you. It'll be emailed to you. That's the two-factor idea, right? It's not just your username and password. There's an additional piece of information they're going to supply to some trusted place, your cell phone number, your email address. There are also apps that do this like Authy. It'll just pop up a code you got to punch in, but you can't log in. So even if you do get breached, they can't log into your account without that additional information. While I know it's kind of a pain, I use it everywhere because, you know, Dave, Doomsday Dave, tinfoil hat guy. But, you know, certainly anything with your sensitive personal information, health insurance information, bank account, anything like that, you should turn that on. And I would go as far as to say, if you're working with someone who does not support that, I would find someone else to work with, because it's not impossible, but it's much, much, much more difficult for someone to breach your account once multi-factor authentication is turned on.
Yeah, I always opt for the text message opportunity if that's there. So I do put up some defenses, I suppose.
That's a good plan, Michael.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So another headline I saw about cybersecurity that I thought was interesting. Hackers can turn headphones into acoustic weapons. And this has an image of someone wearing, you know, headset. A lot of people wear them. When I drive through downtown Cincinnati, the station, a lot of people walk to work with these on.
Sure.
You wear them for video games. What do cyber attackers want with your headphones?
Well, that's a really good question. And I guess in my mind, there's two angles to this story. One is it shows another example of a case where there are unintended consequences of all this technology. And then if you're some sort of malicious hacker, possibly a nation state, you know, okay, if you can make the speakers in my PC play a really loud noise, yeah, that's pretty irritating. But I don't know that the speakers in my PC could create a harmful level of decibels. Maybe they can. I'm not an engineer. I don't know. But if you think about it from like a headphone perspective, you know, could the headphones you're wearing potentially be cranked up to a volume that would cause some sort of damage to your hearing? Maybe. The bigger concern in my mind is this interconnection with the physical world that we see increasing with technology. So imagine if you were driving in your car and suddenly your cell phone, and imagine this now on a grand scale like downtown Boston at rush hour or some, you know, very dense city where there are thousands of cars at any given time. And suddenly hundreds or thousands of cell phones, every Apple phone, every Android phone, just started screeching as loud as it could go. Now, could that harm your hearing? I don't know, but I guarantee it would cause a lot of chaos. You'd have people wrecking, trying to screw with that phone while they're driving, you know? So could you cause damage in the real world as a result of trying to weaponize something as silly as making the thing play as loud as it could? I would say yes. There's a real interesting story. A few years ago, hackers demonstrated very clearly, and it led to the recall of over 1 million Chrysler vehicles, that they were able to use the remote access capabilities of a Jeep Cherokee to control the vehicle while someone was driving it. They could apply the brakes. They could change the engine speed. They could do all kinds of things. And this is not unique to Chrysler, but this story got a lot of press and ultimately led to this recall. You know, there's a recent study that came out that speculated, think of the damage you could cause if, pick any car brand, I don't want to pick anyone in particular, you could make every model of this Toyota or every Tesla or every whatever suddenly just jam on its brakes going down the expressway or suddenly accelerate out of control. I mean, you would literally have millions of people potentially subjected to this. People would get injured. People would get killed. You know, it's pretty, and they also speculated the kind of the flip side of that. What if we could, they claim according to their computer simulation, if you could shut down 20% of all of the cars in any metropolitan area at any given time, just make them stop, you would basically just cause total gridlock. Ambulances couldn't get through. I mean, think about that. You're driving down 75 at rush hour and suddenly 20% of the cars around you just stop running.
No, that's scary. And
it's
that's
very
an
scary.
Interesting way to put it. At first you had me where I thought, you know, if you can just make people's computers make awful noises or the mobile phones, I thought if I were going to be a cyber attacker, that sounds like fun. I would maybe be that kind of cyber attacker to annoy you, but I don't want to cause that kind of chaos. So we've just got a couple of minutes left. You wanted to make sure we talked about the medical device cybersecurity situation. We saw a headline that predicts it will be rubbish, which is a word we can say.
Yes.
I think it's a British word, but I think I'm allowed to say that on the air in America. For 20 more years, it'll be rubbish.
I think this kind of goes back to what we just touched on. Now, more and more medical devices are connected. And I mean, if you think about it from the perspective of the medical practitioners and patients, it's really great that your doctor knows that you're getting the appropriate dose of insulin or whatever this device is doing, right? But at the same time, again, there are plenty, and people can Google this and see for themselves, plenty of examples of these devices that, again, were built before people were worried about this kind of security, or they're rushed to the market and then they find all kinds of flaws. Imagine a scenario where hackers knew that a certain type of infusion pump had a flaw in it, and they just basically made every one of them overdose the patient that was connected or turned it off. So you got the flip side of that. You know, again, so many of these things were built before cybersecurity was taken seriously. And, you know, we're starting to see the consequences of it now. And as more and more devices come online, are the companies behind these things, now, you know, the FDA is involved in this and they've got regulations and compliancy and that sort of thing. But, you know, are they doing enough testing on these things to know that these are really not going to be hit with some kind of cyber attack that actually affects people in the real world? I don't know. I mean, it's not good. It's not good. And the point of that article was so much of this is happening so fast, like so many of these IoT or, you know, Internet of Things, smart devices, it's really hard to know, are these things secure? And what kind of, let's assume your infusion pump's got 1 million lines of code in it. You're going to test every single one of them in every conceivable scenario. I would say in something like that, yeah, you really need to, because of the impact on, you know, human beings in a very concrete, direct sort of way. Does that happen? I don't know.
Scary. 10 seconds.
Crazy.
The smart diaper that Pampers is putting out.
Smart
good news
diaper.
Or bad news?
I'd say bad news. I'm not certainly not going to give up that kind of information. You know, the smart depends are even scarier. Smart depends are terrifying.
We're getting close to that age. From Entrust IT expert Dave Hatter, also the mayor of the great city of Fort Wright. Thanks for coming in and chatting with us.
Always my pleasure. Thanks, Michael.
Up next, after decades as the spokesperson for the University of Cincinnati, Greg Hand is now the gatekeeper of some of Cincinnati's best known and obscure curiosities. He joins us next. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our show are online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.